wouldn't say I was going down the best path in school, so kind of being able to go to that program was really beneficial for me.
Like, I'm trying to be a footballer. Okay. And I want to know what it was like for you.
So I grew up in Longsight in the 80s and 90s. Now it's a little bit different. And to be fair, I always thought I was a good kid. But the problem is boredom, what your friends doing, nothing to do. And a lot of people got in trouble.
For years now, it's just been like kids are kids. When they grow up, they can have a say, but we want to change that.
What is your kind of long-term ambition, your career path? It may not even exist yet.
I mean, it's the best sport in the world, secondly followed by boxing, but I put football first. I think it just brings people from different backgrounds together.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Manchester United podcast with me, Helen Evans. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Anthony Savory from Manchester United Foundation. Hi, Anthony.
Hello.
In the audience, we have 8 young people from the Foundation's Youth Voice Group. Hi, everyone. We're also joined by Wes Brown, former player and legend here. That's in the script. Thank I had you. To say that, Wes. And a member of our social media team here, Jordan Eyre. Jordan will be joining us a little bit later. And we've also got Lamine Touré, actor, community activist and United fan. So welcome to you all. We do also have a guest a little bit later on as well. That will be Kate Green, who is the Deputy Mayor of Greater Manchester for Policing, Crime, Criminal Justice and Fire. She's not here at the moment, but she will be joining us a little bit later on. So welcome to you all. It's fantastic to have you all here for a podcast with a bit of a difference. Wes has been on the podcast. He knows what it's all about. You two haven't. So let's start with you, Anthony. Tell us a little bit about what you do at the Foundation, because I know you're there as a full-time member of staff.
Yeah, thank you. So my name's Anthony Savory and I'm the Community Project Coordinator. And my primary role is to look after a program called Street Reds. But as a foundation, we are the charitable part of the club, and we work with communities and schools and supporting young people primarily, and helping them realize their dreams and ambitions and supporting them in every aspect of their lives. So one way that we kind of help our young people is by listening to what they want to say and whether we're catering for their needs. So this is how our youth voice group came along, because we obviously wanted to listen to what the young people wanted to say and obviously shape the program that we run. So over the course of 2 years, we've worked with these wonderful young people that we got in front of us today. And, you know, they've been fantastic in terms of helping us with our delivery, and they've turned into a wonderful group of young people.
For anybody who is listening or indeed watching, can you explain a little bit about what you do at Street Reds? Because it's an incredible thing that you do for underprivileged kids in the community. But can you explain that for people who might not know?
Yeah, so basically it's a free football provision that we have for young people in our communities all across Greater Manchester. We've got over 20 venues that we work with. Last season alone, we engaged with 6,000 young people, all coming together from the ages of 8 to 18. We have girls only sessions as well. We had over 1,000 girls participating last season as well. We got a pool of fantastic casual coaches that help us out, and rain, wind and shine and snow as well that happens in our Greater Manchester weather. But they all come together to help these young people and get them into a position where, you know, we can help them develop in their lives. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Wes, you've worked quite a lot with the Manchester United Foundation, who do incredible work in our communities. Have you come across Street Reds before?
I have, and
have
I met yous all? I have, haven't you? Yeah, I just said to me before, I recognise some of yous. But yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, whenever I get asked to come down and help, I do it straight away. You know, I don't need to think about it. It's great to meet the young people of Manchester. Growing up in Manchester myself, I know how difficult at times it can be. And so obviously these activities that, you know, the club put on are brilliant. And, you know, once the kids get into it, they start to enjoy it, you know, and they have a really good time. But ultimately, you know, they can look into the future and, you know, maybe start out with some of the stuff we do, even around the club. But hopefully they find out what they want to do in life. And this is a great way to start out.
And Lamine, that's the thing about football, it can bring everybody together. And it's just such a beautiful thing that, you know, we can all be in this room together and our common thing is football. What have you noticed about the foundation and the work they do?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Old Trafford, so I was showing a lady before a photo of me playing football with Rio Ferdinand when I was about 10 years old. He came and we was all sat there at the sports barn, and every car that came past, we was looking, going, oh, is that him? Is that him? And he pulled up in his Range and his security guard with his umbrella. And, we was just starstruck as 10-year-olds. So to be able to, after that was through Street Reds and the foundation. This was years ago. You're going back to like 07. So it was an amazing opportunity to meet, a United player. And it just, like you say, it brings joy. It's a global sport. We all love it. Mm-hmm. So to be able to interact with other players is amazing.
And Anthony, you mentioned there about Youth Voices has been running for about 2 years. What's the setup of that then? Do you guys meet regularly? How many people are in the group?
We meet regularly. So obviously a lot of them are at school and college, and we don't want to interfere with that. But we try and meet like during the school holidays, whether it's coming together when we're talking about different issues and challenges they may have. But at the same time, we also try and do some fun activities with them as well. So we've been to things like foot golf we've been to. We've taken them go-karting in the past as well. And then we've obviously had a few opportunities to see matches as well. So they've had lots of opportunities, but they've all given back as well. And they've met people like Andy Burnham as well, and kind of talked about some of the issues that are going on in their lives and their communities.
Anthony, thank you very much indeed. You'll now swap seats with Arissa from the audience, who I'm going to invite up and talk a little bit about the work you do at the foundation. Thank you.
Come on, Arissa.
Arissa, welcome to the panel. Obviously, I know that you've said you know Wes already. Where did you come across Wes originally?
It was at a tournament. I don't really remember where it was, but we did a penalty shootout against him. He didn't win.
What? He didn't win?
No, he didn't.
Who was in goal, though? Wes?
Yeah, Wes was in goal.
Wes, have you been in goal before?
A few times.
Well, Wes, great to have you here. Would you mind sharing your story about your involvement in the Youth Voices project?
It started back in high school when I got involved in a community program with the foundation, because there was a hub officer in my school. And I wouldn't say I was going down the best path in school, so kind of being able to go to that program was really beneficial for me. So one of the things my coach kind of directed me to was Street Reds. So I started going there kind of every week, and I met so many new people, and there was so many people to talk to as well. And then I met Anthony, and we kind of made this youth voice where we kind of talk about issues in the community that really kind of mean a lot to us and how we can change it. And I feel like for me as a 15-year-old back then, I didn't even think my voice would ever even get heard. But I made some best friends for life, and we all understand each other, and the coaches are really understanding as well.
That's incredible. Can you just give us an example of some of the things you might bring up when you guys are together, some of the things you want to talk about?
Some of the kind of crucial issues we were talking about was last winter was kids being cold. So in how we fixed that, we gave out coats and scarves and kind of just little things to help those kids, because no one likes being cold. So just to give back was really nice. And another thing in the community was we all kind of talked about kind of knife violence and just violence in the community, and how the coaches and everyone can kind of bring more opportunities. So Street Reds is a massive, massive thing around Greater Manchester. But there was a thing from after school where kids kind of have nothing to do. So from that like 3 to 5 period. So we talked to the coaches about it, and they decided, well, they agree with us. So they're going to kind of, because most Street Reds are kind of connected to a school, we're going to do a 3 to 5 session where kids can just go be somewhere warm for a bit, charge their phones, talk to their friends. I kind of just socialise with each other.
And play football as well.
And play football as well, of course, yeah.
Would you say being part of Street Reds and now Youth Voice has been life-changing for you?
Yeah, 100% it's been life-changing. Like I said, a kid back then who was going down a wrong path, I didn't really see much for myself back then. I didn't even think I was going to leave school with as many GCSEs as I did. But I had somewhere to go every week. I had something new to look forward to, whether it was reward trips like going to Chill Factor, or whether it was just even going to Street Reds and like having like a special member there or something. I don't know. It was life changing in a way, because I've reinvented my whole future now. I went to Munich. I never thought I would leave Manchester, leave the country. But I've met so many new people. I've talked to so many new people. And I've always said to Nick and Anthony, if I could change one kid's life like they changed mine, I'd be very grateful.
Wow, Arissa, you talk so well. And it's really, really moving when you talk. Honestly, it really is. And where's that must resonate with you as well?
Yeah, it does. Do you speak German?
No. I did a GCSE,
but... Yeah, well, it was pretty similar. I mean, the only difference was in my day. So I grew up in Longsight in the 80s and 90s. Now, it's a little bit different. And to be fair, I always thought I was a good kid. But the problem is boredom. What your friends doing, nothing to do. And a lot of people got in trouble. You know what I mean? But I was very lucky to have a good mum and dad. At the time, you know, I did play on a football team, Fletcher Moss Rangers. I managed to get on there with my mate, who forced me to go on, really, because I used to do karate. I did in Withington, Witherton Bass. I don't even know if Witherton Bass is on anymore. Is it still there? And I failed my black belt twice at 10. And then decided I wanted to play football because that's all I did on the street with my mates. And pretty quickly, got onto it was called the National School of Football, which is at Lillishaw, which is Stafford. So I sort of went away for 2 years and played football, where I couldn't get in any trouble. And when I say getting any trouble, just being in a situation where you've not done anything, but you're there, you know. And my dad was always, you know, he always used to mention that to me all the time. It's not necessarily it'll be you, it'll be somebody else, but you'll be there and you'll be in trouble.
Guilty by association.
Yeah, I mean, and nothing's ever, it was nothing bad, but, you know, things happen, don't they? Especially when you get bored. In the streets of Manchester. So, I was very lucky in that sense. And we didn't have anything like this in schools or in the community to help out. It was all, you sort of fended for yourself. So I think it's great, obviously, what especially what you've been through now. God, you actually, how old are you now?
16.
Oh, no, I was going to, was that the first time you've been on a plane?
No, okay. But it's the first time I kind of like, independently went away.
Oh, good. Well, it's like for football for me, the first time I went on the plane was the Milk Cup, which is in Northern Ireland. I was 14, and that was because I played for Man United. You know, and my family never went anywhere. We couldn't really afford it. So, you know, it was massive for me when I was 14 growing up to be part of the club. And now that obviously there's stuff going on in schools and the community, it's just brilliant and people can get involved in it.
All right, so do you have any questions for Wes?
Kind of just how life was after football, like the transition of like training every day.
Yeah, well, have you seen my pictures? you put a bit of weight on, but no, it was okay. I mean, with the football side of it, I played till I was pretty old for a footballer, which is 38, and I played in India in a place called Kerala, and the team was called Kerala Blasters, but I had really bad knees. And it was funny about the last four games, you just know it's not happening anymore. And I really managed to enjoy it. But I always thought because of my knees, I would retire a little bit earlier than that. But because it lasted so long, the transition was fine. I knew this would be my last club. There was only 18 games in a season. So in my head, it wasn't like a big 42, 50 games a season. It was just these 18 games that I'm going to enjoy as much as I can.
Was it hot out there?
It was very hot.
It must have been tough.
Yeah, we trained at like 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
And it was still hot.
And also it's
then we had breakfast and then, you know, you do a bit of weight training in the afternoon.
Right.
But really enjoyed it. It was a good experience as well. And then luckily, because I've been at the club for so long, you know, I pretty much started, you know, doing stuff for the club straight away. So, you know, the transition in that sense was good. The only difficult part is I was always used to waking up and going training. So I've not really been home in the morning ever, if that makes sense. Yeah. I'm always out. And that was probably the hardest thing, is not knowing what to do in the morning sometimes because I just wasn't used to it.
Arissa, what do you aspire to be?
Good question.
I mean, I didn't know when I was 16, so it is a difficult question.
I don't know 100% what I want to do, but I enjoy speaking. I enjoy talking about how my life's been changed, and I enjoy giving back to the community as well. That gave so much to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
your family must be very proud, and I'm sure Laman, you would agree. Whenever you hear Arissa speak, you know it is close to home. How people are struggling around Manchester, and it is so close.
Yeah.
What was your journey in life like?
So I'm an actor. I've been acting professionally now for 7 years. I really wasn't academic at school. I left school with two GCSEs. I didn't pass maths and English, you know, but I was confident. I was a confident kid. And I think I found out at a young age that I enjoyed acting. So I knew that that's what I wanted to pursue. And I was in year eight. I was naughty. I was on report card. I was in detentions all the time. I couldn't sit still in class. I was hyperactive. But when I used to go to drama, I used to love it. And then when I was 14, start taking it a bit more seriously, and I knew, okay, this is what I want to pursue. So I've been lucky that from 14, I've known this is what I want to do. And then when I was 17, I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to go to a drama school. And I went to that drama school, did 3 years. There was lots of highs and lows. It was difficult. And then I've been out working in the industry as a creative, as an actor for the last 7 years. And there's so much rejection. I kind of relate a little bit to football, especially in the academy process, the amount of rejection young footballers get. It's the same with actors. Loads of people start off wanting to do it and then they slowly just drop off. And the amount of rejection we face, it builds resilience and character. And you know, you wake up on a Monday morning, you've gone for an audition for a life-changing role and you don't get it. But then you get a part and everyone sees the part, but they don't see all the no's before you get that job. So yeah, I've been on shows like Coronation Street, Waterloo Road, Doctors. I've done multiple UK tours around the UK on stage, and I've been lucky enough to make it my career. And like I said, you know, my academics were shocking. Didn't get my Master of English, but I think if you find what it is you enjoy, you can go all the way and just pursue it 100%.
And obviously, you're a huge Manchester United fan growing up. I mean, must be a stone's throw from Old Trafford.
From Old Trafford, we could hear the stadium. Like, if I was walking back from the shops and we scored, I could hear it.
Had you ever been here before as a child?
Yeah, I think the first game I went to was a youth cup game. The big group of us, my mum and my other mates, mum took us all down. And I'm sure it was the under-18s. It might have been Ravel Morrison's year, maybe. Or maybe it was before them even. But yeah, I've been to the ground a lot, yeah.
And watched Wales a lot, I presume?
Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions for Wes or for Lamin? Kadim is going to swap with Arissa. Ask a question. Thank you very much, Arissa. Thank you. Hi.
Hi, you're right.
Welcome to the panel. Yeah. Who's your question for?
Wes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'd say for anyone aspiring to be a footballer, mm-hmm. what was the academy journey like? Because like, I'm trying to be a footballer. Okay. And I want to know what it was like for you. And what advice would you give to anyone that's in that situation right now?
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure you're like me. Then, you know, once you knew you were good at it, that's what you wanted to do. You focused. I mean, at the time for me, I still lived at home. And obviously, as you get older, I think the difficulties for me at times was not necessarily the football side. It was when you turn to 17, 18, start going out with your mates, girls. You know, you can go places on your own. It was just finding the right balance, the right boundaries, because ultimately I've not got to where I want to be yet, you know. My dad was a big part of that, if I'm being quite honest, and he would always put me back on the ground if needed, as in, listen, you've still got to train hard, you've got training tomorrow, you've got a game on Saturday, so you have to really focus and sort of let your mates go and have the fun, but you're just concentrating and doing the best you can to become the footballer you want to be, because the higher you want to go, you have to sacrifice all them things a little bit earlier on in life, unfortunately. But that's what you want to do, and I'm sure you'll do that.
Great advice. Kadim, how old are you?
I'm 16.
And how long have you been part of the project?
I've been going through this for about 6 years now, but as of the Youth Voice, for about 2 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of issues do you want to tackle in your community? What are you passionate about?
I'd probably say getting more of the youth off the roads and giving them more opportunities to excel.
And for you, the aspiration is to become a footballer. What position do you play?
Midfield.
Midfield.
Well, I used to play centre-back.
Did you? Yeah.
Oh, you've got moved forward. Usually people get moved back.
Nah, yeah, to be fair, I move back here and there. I play centre-back sometimes, but yeah.
And who are you playing for at the minute?
Salford City.
Okay, fantastic. Wes can put a good word in then for you there. He knows a few people there, don't you, Wes?
I do, yeah.
Well, all the best of luck and thank you very much for your question. Does anybody else have a question? Daniel, welcome to the panel. How long have you been part of the project?
I've been going through this for quite a few years now, but as of the Youth Voice panel, I joined it as it started a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm.
So you're one of the core founding members. Tell us about some of the things that you have wanted to recognise in your community, things that you wanted to change.
I think for the youth panel, it's about using everyone else's voices, finding a voice for the youth. It's not really about individuals. It's about collectively getting what we want for the youth and focusing and tackling that, because for years now, it's just been like kids are kids. When they grow up, they can have a say, but we want to change that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Who do you have a question for?
It's like an open, I think it's more of an open question.
Yep, go ahead.
At the start of your careers, it was like less social media, but as you've grown into the age of social media, do you think that had like a massive impact on how, on your career and on your life and dealing with everything and fans and fame?
Yeah, you've got to utilise it, definitely. I think there's pros and cons to social media. It's very, like, vast. But I think if you can utilise it, definitely utilise it where you can. It's a networking opportunity, isn't it? You know, I've sent DMs to people to try and get them involved in stuff. Sometimes it doesn't get seen. Sometimes it does, and they'll respond, and you've struck up a relationship. I think we have access now to everyone, don't we, essentially? You know, you could go and DM Idris Elba if you wanted. You might not reply, but do you know what I mean? You could. So, yeah, I think you can utilise it and use it as a platform to showcase your work, showcase what it is you're doing, and use it for a positive, yeah, mm-hmm. I'd say.
Obviously for you, Wes, it's been a big change. When you first started out, there wasn't, I'm not making you feel old, but was there mobile phones?
No, that's
steady. Only just.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Was it old phones? The one with the
90,
the big area.
Yeah.
95, yeah. I mean, I didn't get mobile till 17. Yeah,
yeah.
And they were a bit bigger than they are now as well, and heavier. But yeah, it's a very good question, that, and you know, it's one where I feel in my day it wasn't a thing, and then when did Twitter come out?
I know, like, was it like 05 or something, 06
maybe, just before that?
Yeah,
Jordan, our social media expert.
No, this is the truth, because I think it's very difficult for the players nowadays, if I'm being quite honest. But
what, in terms of criticism?
I mean, you can use it to an advantage, but there's also a disadvantage as well, especially if you're a player that, you know, looks at everything and, you know, tries to be involved in everything. I think it can be very difficult in that sense. I do think it can help in way as well in other ways. But yeah, when that first came out, honestly, the manager, we wasn't allowed it. We wasn't allowed it, because if you remember, everyone got in trouble with writing stuff or whatever, and the manager wasn't fond of it at all. We did actually find out that he can't actually stop you from having it. Okay. But, you know, he would suggest that you didn't have it at the time, and which you can totally understand when you look back now, because it wasn't probably used for what it is now, if that makes sense. And that's like what you said, connecting with people.
Yeah, if you look at what Rashford did with his campaign,
exactly,
that was all led via social media,
and
wasn't it?
Pretty much, you round the world, what, in the same day?
Yeah.
In the same few minutes. So in that sense, it's absolutely brilliant.
Great question, Daniel. Thank you very much indeed. Laman, you've spoken about your acting. Can you tell us a little bit more about the community activism work that you've been involved in?
Yeah. So I wouldn't have claimed the title of an activist until more recently. I think I'm starting to own it. I'd say I've been an activist now for about 4 years. So I was involved in a number of kind of high profile campaigns. One of the main ones being about kind of celebrating local Black history, celebrating positive role models from the history books and getting it onto the curriculum and teaching local Black history. So just very quickly, can I get a show of hands if you know who Muhammad Ali is? Yeah, so everyone in the room as well, everyone at the back, yeah? Can I get a show of hands if you know who Len Johnson is? Amazing, no one. Okay, so this is what we've got the campaign for, because we go into rooms and we tell the story and people aren't aware of it. So Len Johnson was a boxer from Manchester. He was born in Clayton in 1902 to a West African dad from Sierra Leone and an Irish Mancunian mother. So he's mixed race, same as me. And he had 135 professional boxing fights and he won 93. And he fought the best fighters of his generation. Mike Tyson, there's a video of him on YouTube describing Ted Kidd Lewis, a fighter from Essex who had over 200 fights, and describing him as the greatest fighter to ever come out of Britain. Well, Len Johnson from Manchester knocked him out, and he fought in the 1920s and the 1930s. So we're talking, you know, over 100 years ago. But disgracefully, and you know, you might wonder, okay, well, how come we've never heard of this story? How, you know, why has it took me 24 years to hear this story? There was a policy in place which stated to compete for the British title, to be a champion in this country, you had to be born to two white parents. So there was a racist policy which stopped him from ever becoming a British champion. So Len retired in the 30s, demoralised. He had, like I said, 135 fights, 93 wins. And he never became a champion because of that policy. It took another 10, 15 years until around the 1940s until there was the first black British boxing champion. I mean, we all know who Anthony Joshua is, don't we, for example. You know, these fighters stand on the shoulders of the likes of Len Johnson. When his career ended, he went on to become a huge activist in the community, and he campaigned for loads of things globally and locally. He was based in Moss Side. He set up an international club where he offered advice to the growing black community in South Manchester. He overturned the colour bar policy, which is where if you went into a pub and asked for a pint, the landlady or landlord could refuse to serve you because of your skin colour. He then went back to that pub with 200 people, black and white, and protested, and that overturned the policy. So he had this amazing story. You know, he was a fighter both in and out the ring, but what's shocking is that we're not aware of this story. It took me 24 years to ever hear that amazing story. I've, you know, grown up in boxing gyms and mixed race. I love boxing. I've watched it. We all know who Muhammad Ali is. Why don't we know about a local figure in Manchester, a sporting legend, whose story I believe was hidden from us? So there's a campaign to build a statue. This has been backed by Andy Burnham and the council. It's been backed by people like Anthony Joshua, Ricky Hatton, Amir Khan. We did a big celebrity football match last year where we tried to raise funds for the statue. We got over 1,000 people down to a stadium and loads of celebs played. Andy Burnham played actually himself. A guy called Big G. We had actors from Coronation Street, Hollyoaks. Football freestylers, all sorts. So it was an amazing event. We're doing it again this year. I think the main thing is we just want people to be aware of this story. We want to make Len Johnson a household name. So if you go back and Google him, you know, when you get home tonight, read up on his story, read up on his struggles. And although we've come a long way, we have to address the balance and make sure that we're celebrating, you know, our collective history and our black history on, you know, all year round, not just in October. So that's a little bit about the campaign that I'm involved in. Yeah.
Well, I guarantee everybody who's listening or watching will be Googling him now, and that's why you need to get the message out. So all the best with that. Thank you very much indeed. We welcome Mohammed to the panel. Mohammed, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you. How old are you?
I'm 17.
17. And what are you doing at the moment? School, college?
Right now I'm in college.
And what are you studying?
I'm studying accounting, business and computer science.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how long have you been involved with Street Reds and the Youth Voice Book?
Well, project? I came later than all these guys.
You're a newbie?
Yeah, I'm like, I've probably been here for like a year now.
You seem like a real little family together. It's really nice to see. Who do you have a question for?
I've got a question for Wes.
Yes, go ahead.
You know, when you were talking to Kadeem before, you said like you haven't like achieved what you wanted in life. I just wanted to know what that was. Have you achieved it or not?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about achievements of playing football,
I mean, like just in general, like have you achieved what you really wanted in life?
I would say yeah. I mean, there's still a lot to achieve. But if you're talking about, for instance, on a football scale, the only thing I ever wanted to do was play for Man United. I'm talking one game. You know, that I would have been happy with that. Okay. Just to say, yeah, okay, I've done that, and then you know, you move on to other stuff. But to have actually play for the club for 12 years, you know, won many trophies, lots of memories, and with some great, you know, teams and players. That is probably more than I could have. Was dreaming when I was a young kid, you know, when I'm sitting in my bed, you know, panicking over playing this game tomorrow because, you know, there'd be some scouts there or anything. So in that sense, yes. The like I said, the club have always been a big part of my life since I was 13 years old. So, you know, what I do now, I really enjoy. I have a family of my own as well. I have three girls. A bit of a nightmare, everyone.
How old are they?
So my girls are 21, 16 and 13. Oh. So yeah. So I'm pretty much a taxi driver now as well, which is interesting. But yeah.
I'm curious, what do you do right now?
So I still work for the club, so I will be doing stuff like this. I do stuff on match days. I do a lot of meet and greets. A little bit like an ambassador.
Okay.
So sometimes I travel around the world, which is very interesting. I get to go to some fantastic places, meet new people, try new food, which is interesting as well. That takes pretty much all of my time at the moment.
What's the latest food you've tried?
So I was in Hong Kong 2 days ago.
No, I mean, like, when I said, yeah. like an exotic food you try?
It's more. So I was in Hong Kong the other day.
No, I tell you the truth.
And the meals are pretty much the same. But for instance, the chicken will come with a chicken head. And like, you know, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah, I think it's just more for the viewing. But then I'm like, okay. I mean, it's still the same chicken.
I think
chicken.
You can't eat a chicken head though,
No, you can. And like, yeah, there's other stuff. But it just comes full on that I'm not used to. So that takes a while to sort out in my head.
Some great questions there. Thank you very much indeed, Mohammed. We are going to take a pause because in a moment we are going to welcome Kate Green up to the panel, and then hopefully we'll have time for some more of your questions. Okay, next up on the panel, we are welcoming Kate Green. Kate, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It really means a lot to have you here. Would you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit what you do?
Yes, so I'm the Deputy Mayor of Greater Manchester, which means I work every day with Andy Burnham. And what I do on his behalf is I look after community safety, and that means looking after Greater Manchester Police and Greater Manchester Fire and Rescue Service, and all the work we do to reduce crime and keep people safe. So, for example, the Violence Reduction Unit that we have in Greater Manchester is part of my department. We do work on gender-based violence, so violence against women and girls, but also sometimes against men and boys that's caused by people being hateful because of somebody's gender. We do work on substance misuse, drugs and alcohol, and helping people to get into programs that can prevent them from using those substances because they're illegal and you can get into trouble, but also they're really, really bad for your health. And it's a really interesting job because every day I get to go out and see all the different projects and programs that we're running, particularly to work with young people, really to try and keep all of our communities safe and help make sure that people don't get mixed up in crime and violence, either as a perpetrator, we don't want people committing crimes, but also a big focus of our work is to look after victims of crime and make sure that they're properly protected.
How familiar are you, Kate, with the Street Reds and the Manchester United Foundation?
Oh, I know Manchester United Foundation and the Street Reds really well. Before I was the Deputy Mayor in Greater Manchester, I used to be the Member of Parliament for this constituency. So I was Manchester United's MP. And so I got to know Manchester United Foundation a long, long time ago when I first became the Member of Parliament here. And I've seen some of the great work that's been done by the foundation to give young people the chance to develop yourselves through sport and team activities. I've seen that it's been great for both girls and boys to participate. I remember when we started really involving lots more girls in the activities of the foundation. And I've seen some of the really amazing work that the foundation's doing with young people with disabilities. And that's really, really inspiring to see. It's really important work.
Are there any budding politicians amongst you?
No, they're all footballers. I'm not as interesting as these guys.
Guys, do you have any questions for Kate? Arissa? So Arissa is going to come up to the panel to ask her question. Thank you for asking a question, firstly.
Going back to the police, one of the things we talked about as Youth Voice was kind of police presence in the community and maybe how some of the youth kind of looks at the police as like, I don't know, more of a negative thing than a positive thing. So when someone sees a police car drive past, their mindset's kind of like, oh no, instead of, you know, not having more of like a positive mind, like outlook on it. And maybe that's because there wasn't enough police presence in their neighbourhood. So I play football in my side. So compared to previous years, I would say the whole community's gotten a lot more closer and there's a lot less antisocial behaviour, but there is still issues and there is still kind of like knife crime and just violence. So I guess my question is, why wasn't there enough police presence? Why do people feel as if they have to carry a knife or they have to kind of resolve issues themselves? Why can't they go to the police?
Yeah, this is a really important question. So over the last 10 years, we saw a huge reduction in the number of police officers in Greater Manchester, thousands and thousands fewer police officers. And that was because of government funding cuts. It was happening to every police force in the country. But it meant you never saw police officers in your community. So if things were kicking off, where were they? They just were nowhere to be seen. It meant if you phoned Greater Manchester Police, they would take ages to pick up the phone. You know, you're dialing 999. You're really desperate. And you're waiting, you know, 2 minutes, 3 minutes before they're actually picking up the phone. And then they weren't actually coming out because they didn't have enough police to go and deal with the incident. And It meant too that people didn't know the police officers. There was no sense of he's my local officer. I can get to know him or her. I can, you know, build a bit of a relationship with them. Things have changed now. Since Andy became mayor in 2017, we've been putting more police officers back into Greater Manchester Police. So we're now back over 8,000 officers. That's the highest number we've had since 2010. And what we're doing is we're saying, with all these extra officers we've got, we want to have dedicated teams in every neighbourhood in Greater Manchester. And we're going to protect those police officers. We're going to say, these are your named officers for your area. It might be Moss Side, for example. The named officers in your area, we're going to put on the website, here's how you contact them. Here's the phone numbers. We're going to ask them to get to know all the organisations, community groups, mums and dads, schools, colleges in the area so that they can get ahead of problems. So people can say, do you know, we're really getting a bit worried about that park at night. Get ahead. Make people feel confident they could go and talk to those local neighbourhood officers and we can solve those problems before they become really serious. So we're going to have hundreds more of those neighbourhood officers that we're going to dedicate to local communities so that they can really get into this problem solving and get to know the local community. I was going to ask you a question actually as a group, so perhaps Arisa will answer it for me. So we also have some police officers in schools, and this is quite controversial. We think they are part of this problem solving, getting to know what's going on, building trusted relationships with young people in those schools. But there are some people who think, well, these officers are spying on our young people. So I'm really interested to know what you guys think about how we could build that trust and how we could make that a good idea, that schools officers can be really good for young people and good for the community.
I think it's the way they kind of introduce themselves in schools as well. So you can't just walk into a school and walk around and expect everyone to be okay with it. Mm. Just a random police officer in a uniform. No one's just going to be normal with it. But if that police officer was to come in kind of normally, like they know they're a police officer, go and introduce them, but they're in normal dress clothes. They get involved with some activities. They even put on a workshop. And they involve the kids. We feel a lot more like, our voices are being heard, like you guys, you're doing this for us, but you're also involving us.
Thank you very much indeed for your feedback and for your questions, which brings us nicely on to someone who works at the club, who is Jordan Eyre, and he's going to talk to us all about social media. But Kate, thank you so much for taking the time to come and speak to us.
Thank you. It's been lovely to see you all. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Jordan Eyre, welcome to the panel. Someone that we know who works within the club. It's great to have you here and give your point of view of what you do at the club and give some advice to these young people. So tell us exactly what you do.
Thanks, Helen. Day-to-day at Manchester United, my role is social media strategy manager. So I look after all of the content that you see on our social media feeds and channels. So I'm hopeful that most, if not all of you, will have Twitter, TikTok, maybe Facebook, Instagram, those kinds of things. Back when I first started 7 years ago now, it was just Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. And then over time, more platforms have launched, more, you know, different websites and things like that that we are now on as a club. So yeah, I kind of oversee all of that stuff. So everything that you hopefully will see by following United on social media will have come through us.
Where did it all begin for you?
So my background, I remember going to, if I'm sort of start parents' evenings at high school, thinking about how I wanted to be like a sports reporter, working for a newspaper, writing match reports and things like that. This job that I've got now didn't even exist when I was in high school, which is a long time ago now. I sort of reluctantly had. So obviously, as kind of time developed and social media became more of a thing, I sort of kept an eye on it, but my focus was on writing and being a journalist. So I went to Salford University after college. And I did multimedia journalism. So I was out doing things like, yeah, writing match reports, attending press conferences, doing a bit of radio and podcast work even, although I'm certainly not a threat in that regard. And then, through Salford University, just being across the Keys, I was put in touch with somebody here at United. And I managed to do some work experience initially on a sort of, you know, basis of covering holidays, sicknesses, that kind of thing. And then I gradually over time got my foot in the door, asked for more days. I was able to give up my job back home where I was working in an outdoor shop, selling waterproofs and walking boots and that kind of thing. And I was able to then sort of move to full-time hours here at United. And then I've kind of risen through the ranks, much like Wes did at United, from an academy star to then the first team. So I'm now kind of, the social media manager. So quite an organic growth, and weird to think that, when I was around your guys' age, that this job didn't even exist. So for any kind of, people who are maybe in the panel and sort of in front of me now, or indeed listening, if there is something that you're not sure about doing, what is your kind of long-term ambition, your career path? It may not even exist yet. So keep an open mind. That would be my bit of advice there.
That's very good advice indeed, Jordan. Does anybody have a question for Jordan? Because I'm sure lots of people are interested in social media. Yes, we'll start with you because you're here.
I don't know if you remember, but I was on work experience.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I remember you.
And my question is, when you guys get info before you guys post it online onto social medias, how do you guys know, what's the right thing to post so you're not giving away too much information? And
a key department there would be our communications team, who kind of tell us, this player might be injured, we can report on this, or let's not include this player in this particular training video because he might be carrying a knock and we don't want the opposition team to see. It can be really that kind of granular. But everything that we publish goes through a approvals process. So we use sort of Microsoft Teams to share content beforehand. That's got a lot of the team in it, and then people from our editorial team as well, who are older, more experienced, and kind of can spot things that we might not do. Essentially, it's just about having as many pairs of eyes as possible on things before it gets published. So, the contents, sometimes we get information that's very kind of confidential and secretive, and I have to be on my best behaviour to not kind of tell anybody. But then once it's kind of out there in the public domain, then obviously, of course, it is kind of that wider knowledge. So we're all good at keeping secrets, but it does require lots of kind of close communication and teamwork, which I think is another kind of key theme that extends right across the club. That idea of teamwork and working collaboratively. So lots of kind of things to it, not just us sat in a room tweeting something, for example.
Who writes the captions, Jordan?
It used to be me quite regularly, but now it's probably a nice mix of people. I kind of like to be creative and stuff, so sometimes I might have an idea that I'll kind of try and pass them to the team and encourage them in a certain direction. But it is a mix of people. It's not just any one person. As I said, we've got that many platforms now that we all have areas of expertise. So we have somebody who kind of focuses on TikTok and Reels and Snapchat mainly, way beyond my kind of levels of experience. And then I'm kind of more, because of my background in journalism and writing, probably more Twitter and Facebook, the more traditional platforms. But I still write a few every now and then. So, if there's any good ones that I do write, I'll probably retweet it onto my own, and then you can kind of see.
I'm going to ask, if anybody who hasn't asked a question yet, if you can come up and ask your question. What's your name?
Karen.
Karen. Yeah. Welcome to the panel. What's your question for Jordan?
My question is, you were speaking about coming into the career and building your way up.
Yep.
What was the hardest part and the most difficult experience, maybe the pressure of going from just a local job to then having all that pressure on your shoulder?
Absolutely, yeah. Great question. I think one of my key pieces of advice, actually, I was thinking beforehand for working in social, believe it or not, is actually don't go on it that much. You might think that working in social media, I'm on it obsessively, and I suppose I am, or not as much as I used to be, but I still am now. I actually think taking a step back from it, kind of maintains that healthy sort of work-life balance and kind of just being away from your phone. And I think just stepping back also gives you a bit of a look at a bigger picture as well. When you're kind of in the hamster wheel, as we call it, and you're kind of constantly churning things and publishing things, it can kind of be a little bit tough sometimes to just kind of see beyond what you're kind of doing, and you need to sometimes have a bit of a wider view. But in terms of hardest moment, the pressure of going from, a university and then a job where, like I said, I was working in retail, to then handling the platforms for the biggest club in the country, one of the biggest in the world, was huge. I think any person in their early 20s would kind of feel that, but I had really good people around me. And again, that is something else that I can't stress enough. Surround yourself with good people, with the right people, like-minded people. Those that are kind of sat in front of me now, you're not in this kind of thing and on this journey alone. Everyone beside you is kind of in that same boat and on that same path. So bounce ideas off each other, bounce suggestions off each other, and eventually we'll get there. So I was very fortunate. I had a lot of experience around me when I first came to United. People who'd kind of been there, made mistakes. You're allowed to make mistakes. I've made plenty and lived to tell the tale. I've got a few scars, but you do get afforded that license to kind of make those mistakes, but learn from them and then pass it on to other people. So, great question, Kieran. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Anybody else we haven't heard from who wants to ask a question? Yes, would you like to come up? What's your name? Sorry. Este.
You work at social media. How important do you think it is for football and also everyday life? and what would it be like if we didn't have social media?
Incredibly important. It's difficult now to kind of picture, I think, life and indeed sport and football without social media, really, now, considering how many people are kind of engrossed in it. I think what we recognise as a club is just as important as it is for us to tell the story of a game and how a game unfolds, who scores the goals, what the final score is. What is paramount importance is how we kind of tell stories and help amplify the work that the foundation do. I'm very fortunate in that I've spent a lot of time with the foundation and the team who kind of manage their social media profiles, a brilliant team of people who work tirelessly to kind of ensure that these stories and these kind of causes and initiatives are being promoted. You know, we've kind of touched on some of the things that social media can be perhaps negative for or can be perceived badly for, but I think equally it can be a force for good. Again, storytelling, making people aware of certain things that they might need to avoid and that kind of thing, the spread of information. For every kind of bad thing, there is a good thing. And I kind of see my duty within working within social to kind of tell the good things. So, yeah, staying in touch as well is a huge one. You know, we have a massive global following and I think we have a role to play in kind of connecting these people. How can we ensure that somebody who might, you know, live in Australia and somebody who lives in Stretford, you know, a couple of miles down the road or whatever, how can they, you know, they have a common love for United, how can we kind of connect them a little bit as well? So there's so many things to think about, but I do think social media has been overall enriching for sport and indeed in life when used correctly. And that can obviously depend a lot on the kind of user as well.
Thank you very much indeed, Esty. Amelia and Rec, we haven't heard from you. Do you guys want to ask a question? Amelia, what's your question?
So obviously there's like many trends going on online. So how do you as a club keep up with all the trends on social media?
Very good question.
Yeah, great question. Do you know when I said I don't look at social media that much, I also look at social media quite a lot. It's kind of weird. Sometimes you need to switch off and sometimes you do keep across stuff, obviously. I think as a team, because there is, I would say, I think 8 or 9 of us who work in the team regularly, we all keep across TikTok and things like that. I think TikTok especially is where we see a lot of trends emerge. I'm pretty sure that most of you guys, if not all of you, will be on TikTok. So we kind of keep across the trends. You know, I like to think that even though I'm pushing 30, I'm down with the kids still. So we do see things that, yeah, we kind of try and latch onto as a club. Yeah, I'm not a TikTok expert. We do have somebody in the team or a few people who are. And thankfully, they're very good at that. So hopefully we do a good job.
Wes, do you have TikTok?
I don't know.
But we'll get you on it soon, don't you worry.
No, but my daughter, I've been in TikTok, if that makes sense. The dances, yeah. But hey.
Oh, right.
What you do for your kids,
during lockdown, doing the dances.
Yeah. It's actually fun.
Amelia, thank you very much for your question. We are going to bring this evening to a close, but I'm going to invite Anthony back up to the panel. Not sure if you knew that, but that's what we're doing. You're coming back up to the panel just for a final few words, and Lamin as well, if that's okay. The same question to y'all, and that is, what role can football clubs play in communities and why are they so important? Lamin, we'll start with you, if that's okay.
I mean, it's the best sport in the world, secondly followed by boxing, but I put football first. I think it just brings people from different backgrounds together. It's so important that it's in the community. And anyone can play it as well. It's not a classist sport. Anyone from any background can play football and make it all the way to the top. So I think that's another beautiful thing about sport.
And just before you leave, Lamin, what can we see you in the future on TV?
I'm back auditioning. I'm back out in the trenches.
Yeah.
It could be anything. Yeah.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much for joining us this evening and for all your advice for our young people. Anthony, what role can football play in our communities? Obviously, you know that better than anybody, but if you can just surmise it for us.
Yeah, well, sort of following on what Lamin said about football being like a universal kind of thing that everybody enjoys. I mean, that's sort of like the hook to bring everybody from different backgrounds together, different ability levels, with girls, boys, disabilities, different types of backgrounds. They can all come and enjoy the sport and be welcomed by us and supported in local communities.
It just brings people together. So Wes, for you, you've seen the role that football can play in the community, but what have you seen and how important has it been for your
listen,
life?
Pretty much what the lads have said, but there's also things like this. For instance, the foundation helps out with families, you know, not just the kids, you know, it's an all round sort of thing. And I think that's a big part for me. I've been going to schools now for many years. It's not just getting them involved in activities, it's helping out with food. Helping families out, mums and dads, you know, and so the kids are all taken care of, and that's a big part for the community. And with everything else that the lads have said, I think in general it plays massively, especially in the areas where I grew up.
Wes, thank you. And thank you to you all. Anthony, thank you for the work that you do in our community and all of your colleagues as well. And thank you to all you young people and this fantastic project that you've put together in Youth Voices. It's fantastic to hear your opinions. And thank you to all our panellists. That includes Wes, Lamin, Anthony, Jordan and Kate, and everybody from the Manchester United Foundation. Thank you all for listening and watching.